we were selling money, man. Like, we were selling the best thing you can possibly sell. We launched in April 2020. You know, we did it 600K in lending in our first month, and roll it forward 18 months later, October 21, we're doing 100 million a month in financing to brands. We were like 90 people. We, between our Series A and Series B, we'd made, we were a very profitable business. So we were 250 million quid in the bank account. Yeah, it was a whirlwind.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is the one and only Jack Pierce, one half of the co-founding duo behind Wayflyer, which started in 2019 and was valued at over €1 billion just a couple of years later. Here is the story of how he founded that, and this is what he's doing next. Digitalization. What exactly is it, and how can it transform your business? Well, the local enterprise office have you covered. Digitalization is incorporating digital tools into your business to improve efficiency and productivity, saving you time, money, and energy. It could be anything, from stock control to an online payments or booking system, and now there's a grant for it all. The Grow Digital Voucher helps businesses go digital and pay for those improvements that will make a big difference to the way your business operates. And the best thing about it all, the local enterprise office can handle it all for you. Any business from any sector with up to 50 employees can apply for the Digital for Business audit. And from there, they will give you a bespoke digital roadmap for your business. Once that's sorted, you can apply for the Grow Digital Voucher to help pay for those changes. Simple as that. So if you want to make those first digital steps with your business to help save you time, money, and energy, talk to your local enterprise office today or go to localenterpriseoffice.ie/digital to find out more or click the link in the description below. Now, on with today's episode. Jack, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you very much for having me.
Biggest question is how I haven't had you on before.
I know we've crossed paths kind of without actually meeting each other over the years. And it's funny, as I was saying to you earlier, it kind of feels like we have met in many ways.
It's weird, right? Because like, it's like the, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like the 1 degree of Jack Pierce. Everyone's like, oh, you must know Jack, do you? I was like, I don't. Like, I know of him. Yeah. But like, everyone's like, oh, Jack. I'm like, this guy's connected to everybody.
It's a small world, Dublin. I have 55 first cousins, so that's probably where.
But you feel like one of those guys, you're going to pop up everywhere. Like, you've been a busy boy.
It's been a busy few years. So it has. A busy last few years. I suppose when you build a big business in any country, but in Ireland in particular, you know, it gets lots of newsworthy media and stuff like that. So that's probably where it comes from.
You were everywhere. I think it ticked all the boxes, right? Cool story, econ blowing up. It was like this perfect storm.
Yeah, sure.
In a good way.
I think also it was during COVID. So we got incredibly lucky when we launched. We launched in April 2020 when every e-commerce brand was having their best months, weeks, years suddenly of all time, and they all needed cash for inventory. Inventory was being delayed on ships and stuff like that, so they needed more cash for it. But from a performance standpoint, they were all doing incredibly well. So at the same time, COVID, people were at home. There wasn't all that much going on. So someone scaling up at the same time is probably a relatively interesting story, you know. And
it was a cracker story. It really was. It had all the elements. Like, there was a couple of months there, it was just, you guys were just dominating. You were everywhere. Yeah. What did that feel like on the inside? So obviously it's Wayflyer. Anyone not familiar will know it's Wayflyer. What did that feel like for you, though, to be in the inside of that?
Yeah, I think when you're winning at anything in life, you're not thinking about anything else. You know, you just one foot in front of the other and you're just like running as fast as you can and you don't think about it a whole lot, to be honest with you. And winning gives you energy, so it does. So you're like, it was amazing. Like, we were buzzed all the time. You know, everyone we worked with, you know, was loving it. I loved going to work every day. I think I'm very proud of what we did. You know, we were helping e-commerce companies at a time where they needed people to provide them with fast financing. We've done billions and billions of dollars in financing over the years. So
it's just wild.
It's wild.
Like billions would it be? Like, and yeah, coming from Ireland, like, for anyone not familiar, I think most people will be, but anyone not familiar, what was it? What is it?
So at Wayflyer, we provide financing to online brands. So online brands are your Gym Plus Coffees here in Ireland, who are a customer. In the States, it's like True Classic, or the early D2C brands would be like Allbirds, Warby Parker. And by their nature, because most of them are getting their product made in China, they have to pay for it up front. So they do when they order the product. It then goes on a ship, takes a couple of months to get to the US. Then they put it into a warehouse and start selling it. So by their very nature, despite being quite profitable businesses, they have this horrible cash flow cycle where they're constantly paying factories up front and not getting, ultimately generating those sales for a few months. And so what we did that was a bit different to what traditional financiers did was, we didn't care about the inventory or the value of the inventory or the resale value of the inventory. Instead, we said, because these businesses are online, let's capture all of their sales data, their marketing data. Because if a business can sell profitably, they're probably a good business and they're probably profitable bottom line. And if they're profitable bottom line, they can take on debt and repay interest and all that sort of stuff. And because you're looking at their online marketing performance rather than thinking about what the inventory is or checking their inventory, you can get that data really quickly. So therefore, you can make decisions in 24 hours to give people financing. So that's how it changed. You know, people were willing, when something's much, much faster than the traditional method of going to a bank, filling out forms, someone going through Excel files, they're willing to, one, pay more for it, but they love it too.
Yeah. But it's so beautifully simple. You even, I'm not from an e-commerce world, but I looked at it and went, oh, that makes so much sense. Because the traditional finance model is so clunky.
It is.
And it's one for all.
Yeah.
Those models don't make sense anymore.
Yeah.
You as an e-com brand going in and this guy's a property developer, you can't apply the same model. So like all these, like taking a one industry and becoming the best in it, it just makes so much sense. Where did this idea come from? Because it's one of those beautiful, beautiful ideas. You kind of go, oh, yeah, of course, it's a brilliant idea. But like, where did that idea come from? Because it's not that obvious to most people.
Sure. So I was lucky enough. I worked, I actually went down to Cork to pitch an Irish entrepreneur, Liam Casey. So he had a business
PCH. Everyone knows
Liam Casey, Mr. China. If you don't, he's the best stories of anyone ever. If you could get him on the pod, he's someone to get on the pod.
Again, he's like you, right?
Yeah.
So many people go, do you know who you should get? I'm like, I know. I should get Liam Casey on the pod. It's like, make it happen.
Yeah, no one, he's like a shadow in the background that no one really knows exactly what he's up to. But he's an unbelievable entrepreneur. And I went down to meet him in Cork, pitched him an idea that was a crap idea, like terrible idea. And asked me, did I want to work for him? And I was in San Francisco 2 days later. That was on a Friday.
Back this up. No. How did you get in front of him to pitch him an idea?
So my dad actually knows him from years ago.
Right.
He did some work with him from a like business leadership perspective. So my dad was like a sports psychologist originally.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, really cool. Yeah. Worked with a lot of golfers, a lot of rugby teams. Out halves on kicking, that type of stuff.
Class.
And ultimately ended up going into the business kind of world of psychology and leadership because it pays better for the most part.
Yeah. Well, the two, I always think, I'm a sports nut anyway, so I always kind of like look for the angle in business, but like the two are just so similar.
Couldn't agree more.
Like all the things just like they line up so well, like performance, discipline, consistency.
Big time.
Performance under pressure, there's so much there. So he went into that and then you knew Liam through that.
So I went down and met him, pitched him. I'll never forget, went down into whichever hotel it was, maybe it was in the Metropole or into the hotel down in Cork, and he was sitting with Ron O'Gara. And
ramp up the pressure.
And I'm a massive Munster fan. My dad actually played for Munster years ago a few times. And so I walked in and got to sit down with the two of them chatting. So I'm there like, not nervous enough already. Now I'm really fucking nervous.
Yeah. What was the idea?
It was at the time, it was around the time of crypto taking off, and there was these ICOs. They were like initial coin offerings.
Yeah,
I had an idea of trying to short these ICOs that ultimately did go to zero.
But, gonna say, yeah, that would have worked well.
It would have worked well if it was possible. Yeah, it wasn't really possible to do it. But yeah, it was funny. When was this? This would have been 2016.
That's early.
2016, yeah.
That's it. Because I only, literally, was only talking to a mate of mine about this morning. I only got into crypto in 2016.
Yeah.
And it was weird back then.
It was very
weird.
People
are like, what? Yeah. That makes no sense. It was a mate of mine got me into it. So, like, ICOs back then were like
super weird.
A niche of a niche of a niche of a niche of a niche.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember getting a, I can't remember who I got off, but I got a book, Blockchain Technology book, maybe in 2014 it was written, or 2015. And I read that and got interested in the space in general. I had friends working for a crypto company called Circle. They have like a crypto exchange, and they were probably one of the first big companies in the space. And so I was just naturally, my housemate worked there. He was head of marketing there. So I was naturally like interested in it, picking it up by osmosis. So yeah, I had this idea, went down and pitched him, and he went, that's great, but like, it's not going to work. So do you want to come and work with me? So I hopped on the train home and I rang my dad and I said, yeah, so he actually offered me a job. And my dad went, so you said, yeah. And I went, well, like, no, not yet. Let's ring him right now and say, yes, you idiot. So I did. And yeah, that was Friday. O'Gar was probably home. I think he was in New Zealand at the time. And he was home for probably an Irish international. And on the Sunday, I flew to San Francisco, landed Monday, or it landed on Sunday. I went into the office Monday morning and spent 2 years, trying to figure out what the hell I was doing there.
What did he want you to do, actually? Like, that's such a random thing to go down to pitch and then walk away with a job. And you're like, you hear these stories, you're like, oh. Then when you actually meet someone that's done it, we'd Will O'Brien, great entrepreneur.
He's a legend.
Yeah. Oh, what a cool guy. Similar, right? He's just, oh, I just did this and then this happened. You're like, okay.
Yeah. Will actually came in and worked with me in Wayflyer. So he did.
Yes,
so
of course.
Back,
see?
The one back we were, randomly, I was trying to find someone to help with this new idea we had around growth and, you know, trying to improve customer acquisition costs and stuff. And I turned to one of the young lads who worked with me, a guy, Liam Duggan, who's brilliant as well. And he went, get on to Will O'Brien there. And I didn't know Will at all. Met him. He came in on a Sunday, met him. And he just came in the next day and then, you know, did projects.
You Liam Casey'd him. You
something
just
like
brought
that.
Him in.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, something like that.
So what did he want you to do? What did Liam want you to do?
Yeah, so he had an accelerator called Highway 1.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about it, yeah.
So in San Francisco, they have these beautiful offices, lots of product engineers, designers, 3D printers, everything you need to prototype products ultimately and build things. And so they would bring in batches twice a year of about 10 founders.
Okay.
They would build a prototype of a hardware product. It was all hardware products. And then they would have a pitch day. And it was very big and successful. So
what a cool idea to go work on.
Yeah. So it was kind of like coming to the end of that. They didn't know exactly what they wanted to do with it. At the same time, he wanted to think about starting a fund because, you know, that's the natural progression of an accelerator.
Everyone wants to have a fund.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a new crypto.
It is.
Having a fund is the new crypto.
Exactly, yeah. It's an easy life, that's why.
Well, when I saw your man, 20 Minute VC, do a 400 million fund, I was like, oh.
That could be you now.
Huh? Never know.
Huh?
Never know, a couple of years.
Exactly. So yeah, so I went to do that, worked on that initially, but was around the world of just like products, let's call it, for the first time ever, really. Yeah.
So you're getting exposed to all these ideas, all these founders.
Yeah, it was, you know, I always put a lot of my now success or ability to like come up with ideas down to that 2 year period. I put it all down to that nearly.
What a transformational experience,
though. Yeah, like I went out there. Liam, by his nature, is invested in probably 150 businesses personally plus, right from Stripe, first investor in Stripe, which was a pretty nice one. Yeah,
great story.
And therefore, there's always founders reaching out to him. Yeah. And so when I say founders reaching out to him, he's getting like 10 inbounds a week. You know, it's crazy really when you think about it. And he needed someone to talk to those people because he didn't. So I got thrust into this position where I didn't even really know what pre-money or post-money meant or anything about valuating startups or how the world worked. And he just went, yeah, you start talking to all these businesses. And then when you find good ones, do up docs on each of them. And when you find good ones, you know, come talk to me. Yeah. So I was doing these like 3-page docs on every startup that came pitching Liam. And I met like, I talked to like 550 startups in like... Jeez. 2 years.
Pattern recognition.
It was just like, and you don't even notice it, to be honest with you. Like at the time, it's just like it gets beaten into you over time. Mm. So it does, you know, and you're lucky too, because you'll do your first doc and you'll go and say, at the start, I thought everyone was class. I just thought everyone was
this
amazing.
This is going to be my question too.
Yeah.
How did you learn to pick a good one?
So I don't know if I learned to pick a good one necessarily yet. I'm too optimistic maybe in life. I think if you really want to be great at picking good ones, you need to be slightly pessimistic. Yeah, so you're always looking for...
You need probably yin and yang. You need a you and someone else.
Exactly.
You need you and like a bean counter to go, now, Jack, that won't work because of this, this, and this. Yeah,
exactly.
I'd be the same as you. I'd be like, oh, this is a class. This could work because you could do this or you could do this. And it's always like the brain just goes off on a tangent.
Completely. And yeah. And you optimistically think everything can work to a certain extent. So I spent like 6 months... thinking everyone was amazing, everyone was the smartest person I'd ever met, and their ideas were incredible.
And they probably were, to be fair, because if they're getting to that level and they're getting through Liam to you, they've probably gone through, you know.
Well, you'd be surprised, Gary, to be honest with you.
A hard neck will get you a long way. Like.
A long way, yeah. Being good at sales and being good at pitching and going for it gets you a long, long way.
So I read a great quote at the weekend. It was like, someone 10 times dumber than you is making 10 times more than you because they don't have the brains to doubt themselves. I'm like, I need to remember that.
Yeah.
I need to write that on my arm because I'm like, you know, you just start going through your head going, oh, maybe this and maybe that. So
my favorite writer is a guy, Charles Bukowski.
Okay.
And his saying is, he has a saying, the problem with the world is that all the dumb people have all the confidence and all the smart people have all the doubts.
Yeah.
And I used to say it to my brother all the time.
Yeah.
Just to piss him off. Most confident man in the world.
It's true though. There is an element to that. I was saying to someone recently, it's like, you either need to be super, super, super smart or super, super, super dumb, because I'm stuck in the middle. I'm neither one or the other. I'm just kind of like, oh, I know enough to be dangerous, but I also know too much to not know enough.
Yeah,
it's one of that weird things. So you were doing your reps.
So I was doing
my reps.
It was like, I still talk about the time in kind of three segments, we'll call it 6 months of thinking everyone was amazing with the best idea ever. And they were the smartest people in the world. And there was no way I could possibly do what they were doing. Then it was like 6 months of, maybe these people aren't actually that smart.
Right.
Maybe the ideas aren't as good as I initially thought.
Why? What was the change? Were they going through the program and you're like, oh God, they didn't execute on that at all or what?
I suppose it's just naivety at the start. You know, you're just optimistic by nature. So you think everything is great. And slowly but surely, from seeing who goes on to do well, probably from Liam teaching me reps, being like, no, this company is bad because of this. No, that won't work because of this. That's great because of this, but this is a problem. Yeah. Mm. So I think with anything, you know, you need someone there giving you feedback on your thoughts that you have. And that slowly starts to allow you to figure out kind of what works, what doesn't work, what's good, what's bad. It's no different than when we built our underwriting and Wayflyer. We had a young guy, Brendan Kern, who came in, he was like 24. He runs underwriting entirely in Wayflyer now. And I had built the underwriting with Jamie and Joe at the start, and I would do all the underwritings of every customer that came through. And so I would look at them and decide whether they're good or bad. And we hired Brendan's first job out, KPMG, worked in data in KPMG. He was 24 from Kerry. He came on. So I would make him do the underwriting and I would sit there and I'd make him go good, do we do the deal? Do we don't do the deal? I'd make them give them the reasons, and then I go, completely wrong because of this. Or, you're right, we'll give them money, but you're completely wrong for the reason why we'll give them money.
So you were, yeah, you'd learn.
We all need that feedback. We all need that feedback. So it was probably that. Spent 6 months probably realizing that everyone wasn't as great as I initially thought they were. And then started getting to a point where I kind of went, you know what? I could probably do these things better than most of these people coming to me. And it took a year and a half of meeting that many people and seeing outcomes to kind of get the confidence to yourself that was like, actually, I could definitely do this.
You were seeing the full life cycle then. Yeah. You were seeing the pitch, and then were they going to build the stuff, and then you were seeing how the outcome of that?
So, sorry, there was Highway 1, but separate to Highway 1 was just random people coming to Liam.
Right, okay.
So it wasn't necessarily hardware businesses.
Okay.
He typically actually personally invests in software businesses. Right. Hardware stuff is all Highway 1 related, let's call it.
Okay, so you were seeing both sides of the coin.
Seen both sides, yeah, which was just probably really helpful.
And were you always itching to do something yourself? Because clearly you have that entrepreneurial gene.
Yeah.
Were you always itching to do it again?
Yeah. You know what, people always ask me this question about being an entrepreneur and did you have the entrepreneurial gene? I don't think I ever knew like, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I don't think I ever in my head went, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Like I probably thought for a long time, I'd be a professional golfer instead. But I always did stupid, random shit. Like I had a Christmas tree business with my mate that we started by recycling Christmas trees, and then we started selling trees to people and collecting them afterwards and taking them away and bringing them down to dump. We did that for like 5 years. I still randomly get phone calls or texts each year going, are you still doing the Christmas trees? Because my brothers ended up doing it after me, so the whole thing went on for like 8 years. I used to sell like widgets, like iPhone cables and stands and stuff like that. I brought them in from Korea and China, just bought like off Alibaba and sold them into Texaco garages.
Okay.
Just went down to Texaco. So I used to have random stuff like that.
Okay, so you were always building something.
But they weren't real businesses. Do you know what I mean?
Why not?
I think they were just like a bit of crack, to be honest with you.
It was more,
I would see something. So the Christmas tree business started, I was out driving with one of my friends, Dave, and I had this little 96 red Polo. Okay, and we'd driving around, the noise off this thing, it was fucking rattled along, and it was like January, I don't know, 4th, 5th, and there was this Christmas tree in someone's garden, and we drove by two of them, and I went, geez, do you reckon they'd pay us? We'd just gotten rid of Dave's tree from his family home, and he said, do you reckon they'd pay us to take their tree down to the dump? So we went up and knocked on the door and said, we'll take your tree away for a tenner, and the lady gave us 20 quid. We thought, this is great. So we opened the boot, put down the back seats.
In the Polo.
The tree into the Polo. It was half out the back, dragging along the ground.
Yeah.
The whole family were gathered in the front room, staring at these fools putting the tree into a Polo. And we, for the day, then we just went, you know what, we'll drive around and do this. And we made maybe 150 quid. And then,
that's the sweetest 150 quid you ever make, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I always think this is amazing. You've magicked that up from nothing.
Yeah,
from nothing. Created that from here to here to there.
Yeah.
Like it's the best feeling in the world.
And I think that's always my nature. So with the iPhone cables, I was actually in Korea playing a golf tournament, and a guy had like an iPhone. It must have been an iPhone then, was it? No, maybe it wasn't an iPhone or whatever phone he had. And it was a little stand, and he was able to show you a video on his phone by like lying the phone down, and it just stood there. And I was like, geez, that's cool. So I like took down the name on the back of it, went online, found it on Alibaba, bought like 10,000 of them, rocked down to Texaco garage where I knew the manager, the local one, said, would you sell these? Made a little stand, got my little brother who's 10 years younger to make a little stand, put it into the shop, and off you go. So it's what I always think is, whenever I see something that has an opportunity in it, it makes me want to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I have too many ideas and too many opportunities and things. I nearly have to be like, no, I won't do that right now. So, yeah.
Go back to that. You're playing golf in Korea. It's correct there.
Yeah, so I was pretty good at golf when I was younger. I would have played like for interprovincial teams and Irish teams and stuff like that. And so we played in this tournament called the World Club Championships. It was actually on Sky Sports and stuff. And it was in we flew to Seoul in Korea and went out to this place, Jeju Island, which now has a PGA Tour event on it. And so this tournament was an amateur event called the World Club Championships. It was set up by the Samsung family.
Cool.
So they like own South Korea, basically. So
what age were you?
I was 23, 24, wow, that kind of age. And we ended up winning the tournament. So we did, yeah, which was pretty cool. So we've this massive trophy at home. It's up to about here. So we do. I won it with a guy, Jeff Lennon, from Portmarnock. Yeah. So I played a lot of golf when I was younger.
Is that what you wanted to do?
Again, I don't think I would have really liked to have been a pro golfer, but I didn't really like practicing a whole lot. It just like the repetitive nature of standing at a range, hitting ball after ball after ball. I much preferred playing. It wasn't the time. It was more the repetitive nature of the task I just didn't like doing. And you aren't going to be a pro golfer if you don't get used to sitting hitting 500 balls in a row. Unfortunately, unless you're some miraculous talent or something like that.
Yeah. What is it, like hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think hard work beats talent pretty much always.
The irony then is that what makes you not been able to do that makes you a great entrepreneur. It's funny, isn't it, how life kind of like brings you through these different paths, but all the skills you probably learned from golf now make you a great entrepreneur as well. So it's kind of that yin and yang, isn't it?
Big time. I think you talked earlier about sports, how there's a relationship between people who are good at sports and people who are good entrepreneurs maybe. And for me, it's two things. It's like the competitive nature that gets kind of built into you if you're good at sports. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm playing tiddlywinks against you or, you know, table tennis. Like, I'm competitive, like really competitive, like overly competitive. Yeah. My friends don't want to play with me, that kind of competitive. Yeah. But what it also does is it also teaches you hard work, because you don't get good at anything without putting lots and lots of hours in. So like, I didn't love hitting balls that much over and over again, but like me and my brother would go play golf before school and then we got to school. Yeah. Or because we liked it. You know,
but it's also a very individual game. You get out what you put in. The results are very clear.
Absolutely.
It's all feedback, immediate feedback. Each hole is feedback.
Yeah.
You know, I can see how that would tap into that part of your brain.
Big time. Big time. So it's funny, even now when I meet people who are like, we're top class musicians. Yeah. Maybe they were like prodigies at violin or something like that, or top sports people. Mm. I always think that, like, it makes me want to work with them way more, because I know that I know that they're up for it. Yeah. And I know that they want to win.
Mm. Yeah. Well, there's a certain inbuilt thing, right? Exactly. You know, you see that with all kind of like high level performers, and really doesn't matter what it is, right? Because that kind of transfers really across any industry, because it's a mindset.
It is.
It's always an attitude thing over aptitude. Like, I'd rather take attitude all day long.
Big time.
As opposed to somebody who's like, oh, they're really good.
Yeah.
But they have a shit attitude.
Doesn't work. Doesn't work in anything, I don't think. Yeah.
So bring me forward then. So you were in with Liam Casey, and then after that, what was the next step?
So it was while I was working with Liam, because we were in Highway 1 investing in hardware businesses, there was all of these businesses that were raising a lot of venture capital. Like, they might be raising 5 million round. And the reality was that they were essentially putting 3 of that 5 million into stock. Yeah. It was just going straight in to basically pay their factories the entire time. And so I had this idea where PCH had a pretty good name in China. And so if we could go to their factories, the people who we were investing in factories, and negotiate better terms, like, we'll pay you 90 days after shipment rather than upfront. Yeah. And we could use that name. Now, a business wouldn't need 5 million, they might only need 2 million or 3 million. And now we can get a lower valuation, or we can put less money in for the same ownership. We kind of fake put money in by giving them our credit terms.
Yeah.
And that was a great idea. But the time it takes to go negotiate with a factory to get credit terms means you can do what? Like, one a month? Whereas there was thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of businesses that had this problem and needed a solution to it. And at the same time, I'd met Aiden maybe 6 months, a year earlier. At the time, he was trying to raise money for Conjure, his business, and Conjure did marketing analytics. Basically, it would assess an online business's marketing performance. And at the time, we were looking at a bunch of businesses that sold products, therefore sold them online. And we got them to do like 3 or 4 or 5 kind of basically analysis of those companies. So they would go in, pull down all their data, pull out all this analysis that, where you could look at their CAC, their lifetime value after 1 month, after 3 months, after 6 months, cohort by cohort. It's incredible analysis from someone who wanted to look at it as a investment opportunity. And so it was only a few months later where I went, if we could look at their online performance and instead of negotiating terms with the factory, we just did financing.
To just turn the model around.
Yeah, then it would work really, really well. And so I went to him and just said, you know what? I think this marketing analytics thing isn't a great thing to do, and maybe financing might be a better thing. And off we went. Yeah.
So. It's like, I just love these stories because you just have to be doing the thing.
You do. Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, the more I just chat to great founders, like, you have to be doing the thing. And it's always the danger of business models and people's plans and stuff. Oh, we're going to do this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
You do this. Uh-oh. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
But this might. Oh, but that, like, even just listening to your story there over the last, like, 20 minutes, the meandering all leading to the thing.
Big time.
But because you're looking.
Big time.
Because you're looking ahead going, not this, but maybe that if you turned it. Because I think most people would went, yeah, that idea doesn't work, Liam.
Yeah.
And then moved on to the next thing. Whereas you were like, might work if you just
turned it a little bit.
Completely turned around.
Yeah. And I think all great ideas essentially are taking two things that exist and joining them together.
Yeah.
Like nothing is truly new. Yeah. Novel. Like it really isn't. Yeah.
The sooner you realize that, the better.
I couldn't agree more.
People, I see early stage founders, steam coming out their ears trying to like overwork it.
Yeah.
Like,
big time.
Don't worry about it.
100%.
If the more unique and novel you try and make something, the less likely it is to work.
Big time.
Because if you're trying to forge a whole new market in a whole new area, and if you're explaining, oh, it's this, Jack, and then it's that, and people are like,
yeah, big time. I had decided I wanted to do something myself after maybe 18 months working with Liam. And at that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to do something myself. I said, I'm going to do something myself. I'm going to try and figure it out. And I did the thing where I went off and got a whiteboard and flip charts. And I wrote like Uber, like Google, like, what did these companies have? Where did it come from? I did that for like 2 months. And honestly, nothing good came out of it.
Wrecks your head.
Yeah, just nothing good came out of it. And
it's too big.
Yeah, it is.
Too big. Like, it's just, you don't even know where to start. Whereas all your interests were aligning to that like little thing that became a big thing, which became a bigger thing.
Big time. So you talked about doing there, and like, I strongly believe that doing, or every good idea comes from the act of doing, from action itself. And so whenever I meet people, I say, like, go and try and do as much as you can. Go and work in a place where you get to see as much as you can. The more you see, the more that you do, the more opportunities will get presented, the more problems that will exist or you'll see, which will give you a chance to come up with an idea. Whereas the idea of sitting down and going, I'm going to write on a whiteboard a bunch of ideas and something good is going to come from it, doesn't happen. Yeah, not in my opinion.
It's too big. Yeah, I agree with you entirely. Like, It's too big because everyone tries to come up with a $1 billion idea.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'd rather have like a 10 grand idea and actually make 10 grand.
Yeah.
And then, okay, now we can turn the 10 into 100, the 100 into, like, that's how everything is built. This thing of, I think Silicon Valley has kind of like ruined the global psyche for entrepreneurs because everyone looks at it. And it's like, shoo.
Yeah.
Big time. Oh, whenever I go to these like startup events, like especially tech startup events, it's like, everyone's like, San Fran. You're like, we're on fucking Pear Street here. Let's bring it back to like, especially shooting. So I'm like, imagine what could you do on Pear Street? Like, oh, but I want to do global. I'm like, what could you do on Pear Street?
Yeah. Now, how would you make Pear Street better?
What could you do in Dublin too?
Yeah.
How are you going to make your first 100 and first 1,000?
Yeah. Like,
so forget about the, like the first 100 quid, first 1,000 quid.
Yeah.
So if you get that, the information, the feedback you're going to get,
big time. And I think going back to that, that's a genius way of doing it that I haven't thought about it. Come up with like a simple idea here and try and do that every day. Yeah. There is it Stephen King, the writer? He writes every day 5 pages or 7 pages, no matter what.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's complete garbage.
Yeah.
But sometimes an idea comes from just the act of writing, and he'll write 100 pages in a sitting.
Exactly.
But he forces himself to do it because something will come out of it, and it might be a shit idea, but it could be a great idea too, or it could spur a great idea.
If you're sitting there waiting for inspiration to flash,
it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't exist.
And there's that myth, the origin myth, of like, oh, we're out for a walk, and suddenly I thought, financing, free com.
Yeah.
I've no fucking background in e-com, I've no background in financing, but I know this is going to work. No.
That's just
the story the PR company told them to tell, because it sounds more dramatic than busted my balls for 10 years.
Big time.
You know?
Big time. Yeah. This just fell into my lap. Yeah. That's not such a cool story.
So bring me through then the actual starting with Aidan. Like,
sure.
How did you convince him to get involved, I guess? Because he was doing his thing, you were off here doing your own thing.
So I think, I wouldn't say it took that much convincing. Like, marketing analytics is pretty tough business, I'd say. And so when I first pitched the idea, it was like, oh, that's a much better idea than what we're currently doing. And our first job was to go off and get some money, because he was running this other business, to make sure that we could get some money. So I went off for a few months from maybe May 2019 to just pitch it to people, make a pitch deck, like start talking to people. We got some money raised from some angels, which allowed us to do like an advance to someone and talk to them and say like, do you want this?
Okay. So you had to raise to lend, right?
Yeah,
you had to go, right, we need, how much did you have to raise?
I think we raised about 500 grand pretty quickly.
Okay, like, so it's chunky.
Yeah, just off people I knew within my network. And then we gave some of it out to a business, Irish School Books. Yeah, schoolbooks.ie, which is a great business, actually. And they have a lot of seasonality in their business, as
course,
you can imagine.
Yeah.
And so they've a need to buy a lot of stock at a point in time, and they pay it back really quickly once people need to buy school books.
Mm.
And so we gave them like advance, and they paid it back. And so there was our first case study, let's call it. And it was from there, it was kind of like, this is a good idea. We went back and forth a bit still for a while on like marketing analytics. Do we do marketing analytics? Do we do financing?
How you're trying to plug it all together? How are you going to mesh it together and make it
work? What's
the
product look like? There was products within the marketing analytics space that we were kind of trying to copy, but it was just a lot of that. And we really went head first into financing properly December 2019 was when we were like, okay, we're going to do the financing. And that only came from, I went off and I got a guy in Bangladesh on Upwork to get us like 2,000 emails or maybe 5,000 email addresses.
I love Upwork. It's brilliant.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Amazing business. And for e-com founders. So I was like, just can I get, I didn't know how any sales thing system worked, and then can we get 5,000 emails, say, of people with e-com businesses? And we emailed 2.5 about marketing analytics and 2.5 about financing. And we got like a 20% response rate on one and like 1% on the other. It's like, okay.
There's your experience.
We're like, this, we should do this. Yeah.
But I love that. Like, you experimented. Like, I called it the entrepreneur experiment because I'm like, that's what business is.
Yeah.
It's all these micro experiments. Okay, raise the money, give out the money. Okay, now. And then you did tweak the model by going, let's just test.
Yeah.
But in the modern world, Jack, like, there's nothing stopping you doing that. Like, you, just a bit of initiative to go, let's get all these emails and then test.
Because
I think too many people put all the chips on red.
Big time.
Okay, we're all in on marketing analytics.
Yeah.
And then you're grinding for years. Going, yeah. Oh, this is so hard.
That's why everyone talks about pivoting. Because they go all in on something, build something, don't talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Come out of their dungeon, talk to people and realize, oh, no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
Whoops.
And well, then you built it for yourself.
Yes.
See, that's exactly. So much. I'm sure you've seen this.
Yeah.
You build it for yourself.
Big time.
Because you can.
Big
oh, it's going to be cool. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And like,
big time.
Okay, how many people have talked to?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Because it's scary.
Big time.
It's really scary to
big
launch
time.
It and people go, Yeah, there's dog shit deck.
Yeah, there was a guy at Web Summit last week. He came out on the stage and like he's an early stage business, you know, and he did this. He ran out onto the stage and he jumped into the air. And he went, put your hand up if you've got this problem. And no one put their hand up. And he just went, oh, never mind then. And it was the perfect example of someone who built something for themselves, never bothered to ask anyone, probably asked his parents and his friends, is this a good idea? Yeah, of course, it's a great idea. Yeah, there's a difference between doing that and emailing people cold, pretending you're selling something. You know, you build a simple one-page landing page website, send a load of emails to potential customers of your future, selling to them. You'll see if they respond. When they do respond, jump on a call. People forgive you really quickly when you say, well, we're in the middle of building it, so it's not done yet. Everyone likes talking to early stage founders.
But that's
the thing.
People always pretend to be the other thing.
Yeah.
People always, early stage founders pretend to be like this big, slick business. I'm like, no, like your strength is your weakness.
Big time.
You know, you're looking
at people who are into the underdog.
Yeah. By nature, and especially if you're going to build something for them and you listen to their feedback on, that, but more so this.
Yeah, this is what I care about.
Free market research as well.
Yeah. And it's quick. You can do it in, honestly, and it's cheap. Like someone on Upwork, what, 100 quid to do that? 200 quid? A website, like get for a cent, get someone to, you can build a one-page landing page pretty easy.
Yeah.
Get a HubSpot account for, I don't know, 100 quid a month. On the starter package and send out a few emails.
And that's like, what it is. You've literally given the template for how to start a business in 2024.
Yeah. And if no one responds, keep going and trying other things and looking at new things. Go back. What should we do on Pier Street? What should we do in Dublin?
Maybe
too?
It's not for tech founders. Maybe it's for health fitness.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not for them. Maybe it's for like hotels. Just tweak. Because the world is so big now.
Yeah, big time.
That you can literally pick the smallest niche ever and go after it.
And it's massive business.
So you got the response rate.
Yeah.
What next?
So then it was build product. We launched in April 2020. You know, we did it 600K in lending in our first month and roll it forward. 18 months later, October 21, we're doing 100 million a month in financing to brands. We were like 90 people. Between our Series A and Series B, we were a very profitable business. So we were 250 million quid in the bank account. It was a whirlwind. It was a lot of fun.
That's why I wanted to like step through this step by step with you, because 2019 May, kind of kicking off 500K, let's test this thing. December 2019, kind of launch.
Yeah.
And then what was the next
milestone? So April was the first launch. April was like...
So April 2020. Like, start of COVID.
Yeah,
like, literally, are we in the first lockdown? We're approaching it, if not. Like, to launch a business, like a lot of people launch business and went, oh, that's me finished for the next 18 months.
Yeah.
Whereas you guys launched into this upswing.
We were the luckiest founders of all time. And people talk about, you know, you need some luck. Like, you do. Yeah. The thing is that if you start a business and execute absolutely perfectly, but the waves are coming against you, okay, it's really, really hard. Okay. Whereas if you launch a business and execute just okay, but you're being carried forward by a wave of whatever it might be, timing, whatever it is, like you win, you know? And we were when we launched, I remember there was, you know, some funds we were talking to. Who one fund in particular who did our seed round. Yeah, they were the founders of Capital One, yeah, and a guy Nigel Morris. And they were all saying, oh, COVID, don't lend money now. Everyone's going to go out of business. And we were looking at the numbers going, the cost of a click online on ads on Facebook is like halved overnight. We were like, this is the best time ever.
Well,
we were bringing brands
between the external perceived wisdom of the crowd.
Exactly.
Versus kind of looking underneath going,
data.
No.
Data.
We see exactly what's happening, because you would think that, and we all thought that the world's ending.
Big time.
Oh shit, we can't go to Lidl. You know, you can't go by.
Yeah, big time.
Whereas you guys are able to go, well, no, the actual data is taking the emotion out of it.
big time.
And having that niche expertise. Yeah. So did you raise, so you raised 500K May 2019. Did you raise again?
We'd raised maybe 3 million from angels.
Okay.
So we had, in the end, 3.3 million in total by like October, November 21. Again, just people in the network and stuff like that. So,
like, that's a lot from angels, isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
it was. Yeah, good at selling. Reached out to a lot of people.
I can kind of, I'm getting that vibe off you. Like, I'm kind of going, yeah, probably right. Check. Yeah. To be fair,
we talked a lot of, like, hundreds. Like, I think people underestimate how many people you need to talk to raise around. Like, the 3.3 million was probably like 40 people. 50 people, I don't know, 45.
But you'd
people.
A good network though, right?
Good network.
You'd spend years building a network.
Yeah, I was just lucky because, again, from two ways. Golf's an amazing thing because rich people play golf. So I had this network of people who were loaded, who I knew from the golf world and knew me as a good golfer as well, a hardworking, good golfer. Mm. So they're perception of you is probably high in that way, and then from Liam just had met a bunch of people as well.
Social proof is powerful.
Yeah, big time.
I think we don't spend enough time. I was only doing this for myself on the way in here today. I was like, right, next year I need to be better at social proof, getting partnered with certain people,
big time,
to propel yourself forward, because you can be pushing the boulder up the hill on your own, but if you get three or four people behind you,
yeah,
it's a lot easier. So you had the angels there. The launch then, because I think we're going to go on a rocket ship here very quickly. Yeah. So April 2020, what happened? You were doing 100K a month?
So we did. We gave out 600,000 in loans, which at the time we would have been, our fees then would have been probably like 8% or something like that in that month. So we would have done about 50K of revenue. Yeah. And honestly, the next month we did 2 million, the next month we did 6, the next month we did 15, the next month we did 20. It just went like that. It was just we were selling money, man. Like, we were selling the best thing you can possibly sell. Like, go ask a venture investor, you know, their job's easy. They're selling money, you know, and everyone needs it. So,
but you were doing the other thing, like, venture is kind of like, let's see what happens in 3 years. Whereas you were like, well, we know it's going to happen in a month.
Yeah, it was
based on all the data.
Our success was when we started our first pitch deck. SME lending had like a 20% default rate at the time, and in our first pitch deck, we said we're going to have less than 1% default rate. Yeah, and we did. Yeah, and it was all due to the data.
Mm.
It, all due to the domains, like being specific about the domain you're going into, not lending to real estate people and e-commerce people and everyone. If you try and serve everyone, you serve no one. Yeah,
I love that. I say that all the time. It's one of my favorite things. If you're for everybody, you're for nobody.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you're like, oh, we do a bit of this and a bit of that, because then you're trying to build a list on Upwork. Oh, give me like entrepreneurs in like UK.
Yeah.
Okay, what kind? Oh, all.
Yeah.
even the store, what story are you telling them?
Yeah.
We're going to give you money. And like, it's niching is the biggest trick in business, isn't it?
And you understand the founder on the other end. And you understand the problems they face. And so when you're having a conversation with them, like, I know how they run their business. I know what's important to them. I can have a conversation with them that's not like a banker.
Well, you're not selling, you're collaborating.
Exactly.
I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah. What's your plans at the moment? How are you doing it? And slowly but surely you can go, okay, here's what I think you need. Here's your solution.
Yeah.
It's a much better way.
If you're giving them money and that, knowledge.
Yeah.
You're giving them it's a two for one job a year. Like,
I've underwritten over 10,000 e-com brands. No one in the world can say that.
Mm.
Like, not a single person in the world can say that. I know more about good and bad in e-com than anyone that exists.
And you have it here as well.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, we have all these databases and AI and rah rah. No, you have it here. You have it here and here. You're kind of going, I just can't even explain it to you.
Yeah.
But that's a no, that's a yes.
Exactly. And so yeah.
That's... How did that grow though? Because like, that's explosive growth. Because I remember watching this story happen. Mm. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is like unnatural. Like, this is this is a once in a lifetime job.
Sure.
You know, where was that growth coming from? Like, where were these customers coming from?
Yeah, so they were, because online businesses, all of their data is essentially available online. you can build a really unique data universe on every brand that exists, their domains, how much traffic is going to their website, how many products they're selling, what's the price of those products, okay. How many ads are they running on Facebook? Is that increasing over time or reducing over time? And so you get a really good idea in it before even talking to anyone, who's doing well, who's doing badly.
Okay.
So that allows you to be much more targeted in your reach out. And so for us, it was all about how do we build the best data universe, which will allow us to be not just spray and pray, but allow us to be more targeted in our outreach than other people will be. And like we just email people. We got people's email. We sent them emails. We said, do you want money? People respond to you when you say, do you want money? You jump on a call. You would validate and find out if the business was what you thought it was, if we could work on it. They would connect their data source, and within 30 minutes, all of their data will be pulled in and pushed into a dashboard that someone can make a decision in 10 minutes.
Okay, data universe. Love that one.
Yeah.
That's a great phrase.
It's everything is about the data that you have. If you take AI now, ChatGPT is only ChatGPT because they scraped the entire World Wide Web, because they have that data available in one place to be able to reach in and pull out whatever you need to pull out. The AI models and agents of the future are going to be only as good as the data they're built on. They're going to be domain specific.
Yeah,
they're going to be built sector by sector, because you're going to have that level of data about the businesses you're working with in order to be truly able to add value. Yeah. And so, I just think it's the most important thing in everything I do. What we're doing now, it's the core to our entire business. Mm. Yeah.
So like you became a unicorn.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, you know what?
So few Irish companies ever get there.
Yeah, it's funny. People ask two things. They go, did you know it was going to work? And I went, yeah, knew straight away. I knew before because I'd seen it firsthand working with Liam and stuff, and the need for it. Like, it was the biggest problem we were solving. And when we launched, I just like the way people talk to you on the phone, the way people responded to you. I was like, this just the way people would talk to you on an underwriting call. You could ask them anything, because they needed it. So we knew it was going to work. And then people go, what did it feel like becoming a unicorn? Didn't think about it once. Like, from it was April 2020 to October 21, 16 months, 18 months. Like, we didn't have time to breathe. Mm. You just, every month it was like, let's do better than last month. Let's do better than last month. And we had an unbelievable team. Yeah.
Did you keep it that simple?
Yeah. That was it. Let's do better than last month. Let's do better than last month. Let's do better than last month. We had this big push, I remember, that we set in maybe like May. No, even earlier, April 21. It was like, let's do 100 million by October. Okay. We were like, let's nail it by October. Because October is a peak for seasonality pre-Black Friday.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck it, come on, we can do this. And everyone, we had it written up on a wall, and there was just a deals board, there was a bell, and we just, every month, everyone would, the last 6 days, week of the month, everyone would stay in till all hours to just close everything we could. You would jump on any call. If there was someone going, here, can you jump on this call? I think you'll help to get the deal over the line. Absolutely. That we were just doing that all day, every day, underwriting businesses, talking to businesses. But that's the coolest thing ever, because I spent 100% of my time talking to founders of businesses. Like, I love that,
Everyone's a new data set for you.
And just like interesting people. Like, why the hell did you start this brand? There was no clothes that really fitted my style. I had a different taste to what was available. So I decided to get into this, Like, it's just super interesting. Yeah. That's fun. Like, you're not talking to a junior person in a company. You're not in talking to Google and talking to some random person way down. You're talking to the guy or the girl that came up with the idea.
How did you handle this personally though, Jack? Because this is like, overnight fame is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? It's overnight success, overnight notoriety. You are the poster boy for, like, you know, success at that time in a world where the world is going mental.
Yeah.
The world is going sideways and suddenly you're thrust into this thing. Yeah. How did you personally deal with this?
Yeah. So I wouldn't call it fame for sure.
it's a niche of a niche, right?
Yeah.
Startup bros, you're like their number one idol. Yeah. It's a niche of a niche. God. It's like the podcast, right? People come up to me and they're like, oh my God. I'm like, it's a niche of a niche.
Yeah. Okay,
not many people are recognizing it. But I'm like, people do love it. It's like that, right?
Okay. Fair.
Take it. I'll take it.
Okay. So, yeah, you know what? I was still so young, like, in a lot of ways. But I was 28 starting the business. Yeah. I was 29 through that stage. Like, I don't think anyone thinks about, I didn't think about what I'd be doing next weekend. It took me until it was about 31 to probably go like, maybe I should start thinking about the next 4 years or 5 years. I think there's a switch when you start thinking about, like, family and kids and your life beyond
what am I doing today,
what am I doing next weekend. That's happened amongst my friends now in my age group. It happens amongst all of us at a certain age, whereas before that, from like 18 through to, let's call it 30, like, you're just going with it, you know.
So which you were riding that wave.
I just loved turning up every day. I got to work with my mates.
But surely your life changed though, Jack. Like, it has to have changed. Like, surely you were wealthy. You had so many options now. Surely that changed.
The making money was huge. Yeah. Like, we're selling secondary for the first time in our Series A and having money come into a bank account and realizing that, like, your parents and brothers and everything else will be sorted. That was cool. That was really cool. Like, that Christmas 2021, I'll never forget. Like, we were all sitting down at Christmas and it was just, you know, it was like, this is pretty cool. Yeah. This is nice to know that everything will be good for forevermore. Do you know? So that meant a lot for sure. But outside of that, I don't think anything ever really changed. It was what it was. COVID, people weren't going out. As I said, I was working with, like, my brother and my friends. So, like, I spent every day with brothers and friends.
Do you think that kept you level?
Oh, big time. Yeah, big time. Yeah. Like even in Wayflyer, you know, I have a really close group of schoolmates that I've been friends with since I was 12.
Mm.
Yeah. My closest friends in the world. And, like, a bunch of them worked with me the whole way through that, you know? That was pretty cool as well. So, yeah, I wish I could give you more than that, but it was when things are going well, you have energy. When you have energy, you're just getting on with it. When you're young, you're not really having to think that far ahead in many ways. And when you're winning, you just think that you're going to keep winning, you know, for a long time. So that period was just, it was high. Like, it was really, really cool.
Thanks for sharing that, because I talked to so many founders and when I talked to them at the end, you know, maybe they've worked for 30 years of the business, they sell and they're like, yeah, it's nothing. That makes me so inherently sad. It's so beautiful to hear you say that, because you're like, yeah, good for you.
I loved it.
Fucking
absolutely
happy days.
Fucking loved
it. Startups are the hardest thing in the world you can do.
Yeah.
Too many people live in the misery for too long
to
forget to actually look after themselves, to forget to take money off the table. And you see founders and they build and build and build and build and it's all gone. You're like, oh shit. Because you're only a stiff breeze away from falling over at any stage.
Trust me, I found that out all right. So
right?
So you are,
but I was like, and I also kind of looked at you from the outside going, fair fucking play. Good for him. He's doing his own thing. Yeah. So, like, you raised a shit ton of cash as well, because you obviously need money to give money.
Sure, yeah. So we raised 75 million in our Series A in primary, like, into the company. And at about 400 valuation, and then that was May 21, and then by October, like, again, everything was just going so well that we were, everyone was coming inbound to us to give us more money. So, you know, we were offered a 1.6 billion valuation and another 150 in primary into the company. And it wasn't that we needed the money because we were profitable. We were making money at that stage and we had loads of money in the bank account. But like when you're going 10% of the business for 150 million, that's a pretty big buffer. We can do a lot with that money, hopefully. Like it just was a no brainer. Do you know, like if it was at a low valuation, it would be different. But because things were going so well and it was a multiple of the previous valuation, it was like, yeah, okay, let's keep going. Ultimately, by nature, we lend money, but we have banks, you know, relationships with banks like JP Morgan was provide us with capital, Credit Suisse provided us with capital. Everyone tried to give us, wanted to give us money, which was hilarious. Like the biggest banks in the world. I'd never lent a dollar before Wayflyer. And I was going in pitching them and I was showing them how we were underwriting. And they were like, They're like, we kind of don't believe that this data is right. And I'm going, no, it is. And I'll show you why. And then we would show them what we did. And they go, ah, this is completely different. This isn't the same thing that we do. So that was fun. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So it was. Yeah.
Like, it's always like, what was it? When you ask for advice, they'll give you money. When you ask for money, they'll give you advice.
Yeah. When you don't need money, everyone wants to give
it
to you.
It's timing, but you're look, flash forward to what, 2022-ish?
Sure.
The music stopped.
Big time.
The music stopped everything for everybody, changed. Like all these valuations.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's easy to be wise in hindsight, right? Whereas at least you guys were like, yeah, take it now because like,
Big time. You know, I'm really glad we did. Had we not, you wouldn't know if you'd be here today in a lot of ways. Mm. You know, it just gave you such a buffer to make mistakes. And, you know, that was when things were mental from there. We went from 90, maybe like just under 100 people, October 21. By March time, we were 500 people. By May time, e-com was really taking a negative turn. Retail had opened back up, so everyone wasn't shopping online anymore. Remember, Apple had the iOS changes where Facebook now couldn't track people.
Yeah.
So targeting got way worse.
There was a couple of different headwinds there,
So there was about 4 or 5 months where every e-com brand was really struggling to acquire customers and target customers. We saw it early. Like we knew May time, like, oh fuck, like this is
when you see the whole picture. Most people see their own chart. You're seeing thousands of charts going, oh, they're all starting to
turn,
take a big turn. Time. And so what did you think there?
So not alone that, but we had targets we were setting, which we weren't growing towards. And as your customers aren't growing as fast as they previously were, the amount of capital you're giving them isn't growing as well as much. So about April, May time, we were like, okay, God, we need to try and come up with another way of doing it. So we put all our time into trying to solve go to market. Yeah. So we did just like, let's really push hard to try, see what we can do here. Because the better job we can do, the better position or the less worse position we'll be in. It didn't really work, to be honest with you. And it was because it's very hard to turn a ship in a month or 2 months or 3 months. It takes a year, in reality. And I think people forget, despite being nimble startups, when you've made a bad strategic call, it's not something that you can just fix like that. And so, October, November 2021, we let go of 200 people. Like that was honestly the worst day I've ever had. Yeah, had to talk to calls with every one of those people, and I was friends with all these people. Do you know what I mean? And so that was really tough. So it was, and then from there it was like, all right, let's try and solve these issues that we have around customer acquisition and how do we do this better. How do we figure out how to grow from here, because that's what all businesses are,
Had it been a case of like, you can only grow that fast for so long, like had you guys so outperformed the norm that it was unsustainable.
Absolutely. But, you know, when you're in the middle of it all, and at the time, like, I'm sure you, people forget about now, but when COVID was happening, everyone was like, no one's ever going to buy in shops again.
Yeah.
They're like, the high street, gone for forever. No one's ever going to do grocery shopping again. Why would you? Why would you go out and do grocery shopping? Sure, it'll get delivered to your house. And so,
and they weren't ridiculous ideas.
And all the charts were like this.
Yeah.
And by the way, we weren't the only one. Every business at that time was doing the same thing. Like Shopify had hired tons of people. The chart went like this, and then it just came back to the normal.
Yeah. But you never know what the world is going to be. We entered this 2-year period of, okay, the rules don't apply anymore.
Big time.
Okay, we're in a new world. Yeah. What the hell? You can only go on what you know, right? And what you're known is what you're seeing in front of you.
Big time, yeah.
We didn't, like, I think it's easy to now forget really quickly how crazy the world got.
It's funny though, looking back, like even myself, it's like we went from, say, 900 people to 500 people in 5 months. We opened a new office in the US in the same time. Like, obviously it wasn't going to work. Do you know, that's, but
now you know that,
but
you're not going to do that again.
In hindsight,
yeah,
I won't do that again at all. But it's, everything is so easy in hindsight. At the time, it was like, this thing's going to keep going like this. And we don't, the only way we can solve that right now, because it's going so fast, is people. So let's just get people and solve it, which is a terrible way to build a business. Yeah. But that's what everyone did. If you look at that Zerp period, every fund funded, put the most outrageous money into businesses at the most outrageous valuations.
Look at Hopin.
It, like, there's all these, what do they call them now? There's all these businesses that are now classified as zombie businesses because they, like, raised, they're not bad businesses. They're just like, they're bad. They were capitalized too much. They're not interesting to the investors that put money in anymore. There isn't that much growth. It's not that exciting.
Well, so much money went in, it's just never going to be a realistic business.
Exactly.
It might do 50 million a year, but it was valued at like a billion. And you're like, you're never square in that circle, right? That's never getting retrofitted back.
Exactly. And the investors aren't that interested now. There's the next thing. There's AI.
Well, they have to just go, let's just draw that line over there, forget about the lads, and just let's never talk about them again.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the end, there's an AI, right? So you decided to step away.
Yeah.
Why?
So it was around that time, it was around Christmas after we let go of the cuts, where I first said to Aiden, look, you know, I'm not disappearing here, but I want to go traveling. I want to do another business. You know, let's find, you know, our first conversation was like, but we need to solve a bunch of stuff here and we need to get the business back on the right track. And when it's on the right track and everything feels good, then it'll be the right time. But we also need to bring, we'll need to figure out how to bring people in to fill the gap. Yeah. To do what I do, I suppose. Yeah. And that took a long time.
How did you come to that decision though? Because I think looking at from the outside, you're going, oh, this is a once in a lifetime generation. This is a once in a lifetime company.
Yeah.
So to take that decision, how did you come to that?
I think there was a few things. One, like anything in one of those low periods, you're tired for the first time. It wasn't so much that, but for the first time you start thinking about other things. I think I was coming to this age where I was thinking about like my future, what I actually want to do for the long term and family and other things like that. And I genuinely really thought I had another big, big, big business in me. And whenever you're in a business that's like, has a core product, if you look at any tech business, they're all single product businesses. They've got one core product and they really struggle to start any new product. Mm. And I think that's because it takes a long time to build something and it's always going to be secondary to anything else, to the main stuff. You're never going to put your best teams on it, therefore, et cetera, and stuff like that. And so, like, it just didn't feel like we would build it in Wayflyer. Do you know? It just didn't feel like a business that was different to Wayflyer. It made sense to build it within Wayflyer. And the idea, where going back to what we talked about earlier, the idea for the new business came from all that experience of trying to scale and realizing how inefficient scaling is, realizing how people don't scale linearly, realizing that there has to be a better way to do this because it's not just Wayflyer. Every single tech business in the world faces this problem. Yeah. And that problem wasn't financing, relate to the financing and what we were doing in Wayflyer for e-com brands. It was a different problem to solve. And so my first thoughts were, well, we need to solve it in Wayflyer. So, you know, we went off and started building stuff in Wayflyer, thinking about how to solve it. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't it was an internal product to help us rather than something that we were ever going to go and sell and okay. do outside of it. And so, so it was probably a mix of all those things. Yeah. Together. And I think also, like, going back to just, I by my nature get bored easily. I like doing lots of things. Mm-hmm. I always have. I love doing early stage stuff. I think I'm exceptionally good at doing early stage stuff and getting things up and running and coming up with ideas mm-hmm. and getting people in behind it and getting it from, I don't want to say 0 to 1, 0 to 10 really quickly. Yeah, and beyond. Yeah, but yeah, I like that. That's where I get.
Was it a hard decision, Jack?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, big time. It was a hard decision because going back to it, like, I worked with everyone who was there. I worked with, I was friends with. Do you know? But yeah, you talk about, you know, there's more to life than just one work thing, or there's more to life than just work, and there was more to life than just work. I was unhealthy at the time. Mm. Unhealthy at the time. I was thinking about my future, what I wanted to do, all those sorts of things. Mm. Yeah. And it is, I think that's a real turning point, kind of that early 30s age group for most men. I don't know if you ever experienced it at that age. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And like, I think it keeps happening. Mm. You know, like we had our daughter 2 years ago. That was a turning point. Like, it's a cliche of a cliche, and I was always one of those people that kind of rolled my eyes when people said it, but it's true. Like, just life has to change.
Big time.
You know, and it changes when you get a partner, it changes when you get married, it changes when you move. Life changes because you want different things.
Yeah,
you're in your early 20s, you want to be going out all the time, you want to be having the crack, you want to be doing this thing, you want excitement. Whereas then you get older, you're like, it's maybe not what I want. You get to know yourself.
Big time.
I think you get to kind of truly... For me, anyway, it was definitely about getting more self-confidence to go, I actually don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Actually, and not feeling guilty, probably similar enough to you, like not feeling guilty to go, I just don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't feel I have to do that anymore. I can just pursue. And you probably had the freedom, right? You know, you had the freedom to be able to go, if I step away, it's okay. We're going to be all right.
Exactly. Yeah, the business was big at that stage. There was, you know, we would have our senior leadership team meetings. There was 9 of us in the meeting. You know, the business wasn't reliant on one person, you know.
Yeah, well, you brought it beyond person. That. You weren't the key man risk anymore. Like,
exactly.
It probably was a massive dent.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, with time and planning.
Big time. And it makes a difference. Yeah. It probably makes more of a difference than you realize initially, you know, just from a leadership perspective and everything else, it does have a big impact.
I always ask people the question of what did they feel like when they sold, but for you it's different. What did you feel like that day you kind of walked out of Wayflyer on the street heading home, and then the next day you get up, what do you feel?
Yeah, so I think I had a month where, so I was living in London at the time, where I finished, and I was kind of like, what do I do with my day? Because like I would be in work late every day. You know, that was what I did. And I remember my missus came home the first day from work, and I'd gone out and I bought this balancing board, and I had learned to juggle while standing on the balancing board for no good reason. And the next day
she comes through the door and go,
what
are
you doing?
No.
I know, like, mental. I went down to a shop, I bought like weights for like a gym in the house. Like, the next day I went off and I bought a load of books in the shop, and I went to the park and read. Like, it was a funny thing to try to figure out, you know, what I did with my time.
What were you feeling?
What was I feeling? It was probably just like, I don't know what to do kind of feeling. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Like, your day is so structured in many ways. So going from structured to unstructured takes a little while to get used to this. Like, oh, all this time is my own. I could, in theory, do nothing all day if I wanted to. I can do whatever I want to. Took a few weeks.
Was it scary?
It wasn't scary. No, it wasn't scary. I had to, like, I the problem with that when you're in that position is you start jumping into everything and anything. Right. I think within a week I had 3 new businesses started. You know, I had things that I didn't really want to start, but was just like, oh yeah, I'll do that.
You felt you had to do something? Into.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. So it's just a like trying to figure out it was such a change from a day-to-day perspective, yeah. But it didn't take long to get over it, to be honest with you. Give me 10 days, probably 10 days, and I was like, geez, this is pretty good. I could go have a glass of wine at lunchtime if I want to, you know? This is pretty good. So, I myself and my fiance now had decided we would go away. We had a month in London. I started exercising a bit before that, which was cool. And yeah, then we were off, you know, so October 1st, then I'd, like month before it, October 1st, I was gone to South America backpacking. Nice. So that's like a job, like, you know, it's not a job at all. But like every day you're like, we better plan the next day. What are we going to do tomorrow? Like kind of, yeah. Or like you're out and about, you're doing active. Hikes.
You're engaging that entrepreneur brain, that busy brain that needs to be like, okay, task today is we're going to find new hostel. Yeah. Task tomorrow is we're going to go to that. Exactly. I get exactly what you mean.
Hiking,
I know.
Where are we going to stay?
You weren't lying by a pool in Lanzarote.
Exactly.
You
weren't kind of going,
exactly.
Like, I can't do that. I think I don't know many people that are wired like this can.
Yeah.
You were doing what felt good for you. You were able to kind of keep the mind ticking.
Exactly.
How soon was it then until you're like, kind of got this idea? I want to kind of...
Oh, the idea was always there. Yeah, spinning. I think when you're away for like 6 months traveling like that, it's really helpful. So I didn't bring my laptop with, no, I brought it the first time and I didn't bring it when I went to, after we came back at Christmas and then we went to New Zealand, Australia, Japan. And we did like a camper van for 8 weeks and we went to Japan and I didn't bring my laptop that time, but I brought notebooks and I just was just writing the idea out in lots of different ways. And then I would transfer it to, you know, my phone and then eventually I'd send it on to some of the lads to be like, here, this is how I'm thinking about it. What do you think?
So it was always beauty in slowing down.
Yeah.
I think with the laptop, the temptation is I'll go register the domain. I'll go draw up this.
Yeah.
I got an Upwork. Whereas I think there's a beauty to just drawing it down. And having friction actually is good sometimes, I think.
Big time.
Because otherwise it's too easy. Like, because you were probably in the Lean Casey era of like people were like, hammering you with stuff. I'm sure like you were like,
that was crazy.
DMs out the wall going, oh, Jack, I have an idea for this. Like, you know, the man with the Midas touch, everyone wants like you to shine that glow on them.
Sure. Yeah.
So probably having that distance was good.
The distance was great. You know, it's funny. Like we went to Patagonia. We did like a 9-day hike there. I'd never hiked in my life.
Really?
Like I'm not a hiker.
Did you find yourself, Jack?
Yeah.
Did you find your inner
deep meditating underneath trees every day? No, but it was funny. I've never spent that much time like in your own head, you know. It's a funny
thing. I know exactly
thing.
What you mean.
And
but even go for a walk without your phone now these days is like, oh my god, I feel like a new man. You're like, you're gone for half an hour.
my I come up with all of my ideas, or if I've any if I ever have a problem that I can't quite figure out, I jump in the shower.
That was not right.
I jump in the shower and I always figure it out straight away. And I think it's because your phone is not beside you. So your phone's not there. You jump in the shower.
Big part.
You go like this. And then you go, oh, wait. Oh, geez.
It's kind of scary though, isn't it?
It's mental.
It's kind of scary the impact it's having. Like the minute I'm trying to like do the 16 and 8 thing with my phone instead of the diet, I'm using it as like a brain diet.
Gas.
6 in the evening until 10 in the morning.
Gas.
I've been doing it 3 days. I've failed 2 out of 3.
I did
it the first night.
Yeah.
And I woke up.
Feeling
I had a 97% recovery score on Whoop.
Oh, unbelievable.
I'm nerding out. Like I was like, what the? Because I'd done Hyrox on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been able to get my recovery up to like above 50. I was training and recovering. I was eating well. I was like, what is going on? Then on the Monday, I was like, right, I'm getting rid of my phone thing. 97% recovery. Yeah. But
do you like the Whoop, by the way?
Oh, I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with it. Like, it's one of those products that I'm like, this is it. Like, it broke once. I had to get it replaced straight away.
Yeah.
I was like, I needed that. But again, 2 out of 3 nights have failed.
Yeah. It's hard.
Even though I know
yeah.
it's going to be a good thing, it's such an addictive piece.
Big time.
That two out of three have failed.
Big time.
So I've given myself 2 weeks and I'm going to document it and stuff. But like, it's scary how big an yeah. impact it has. It's the greatest tool we've ever discovered, but it's also the biggest curse.
Big time. Big time. I have an app on my phone. It's called like Opal. And so I set it every day from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. And I can't go on Instagram, LinkedIn, I don't know, Twitter, any of the like social media socials. Things. It's blocked entirely.
Ben was just telling me about Breathe or something he has. He has Breathe Out or Breathe or something. It's okay, a cool. the lock on his phone. So similar
it's,
thing.
Oh, it says Opal. Breathe. It says Breathe on it. I think it's probably the same thing. So it is.
Okay, I'm going to download that today because I'm this is day 4 of the experiment. Yeah. So I'm going to download that and just lock it in.
But wait till you see you pick up your phone out of your pocket and you go and you just automatically open it and you swipe sideways and you go click. And you can't. And you're like, geez, why am I doing that?
You're like, yeah, it's just that pause.
You're like, you're going to the toilet. Like,
but you're like an addict. What? I joked to my wife. Yeah. I was like, I don't know how I'm actually going to go to the toilet. No, my phone. She goes, it's weird. I was like, think about it. When was the last time someone talked about the phone?
It's
sat there like a psychopath looking at the mirror.
Yeah, I'd say toilet times have gone at least doubled over the last 20 years. Like they no got
doubt.
Up.
There's no doubt. So when did you start? Do we say what the name is? Are we allowed to say the name?
Happy Stack. Yeah, Happy Stack. So
there's the reveal.
We got back, I got back maybe like April 12th, let's say, and April 13th, we got an office on Baggett Street. And we went into the office. The guys who we originally rented our office off on Baggett Street, they're brilliant. So they are. And so they've got this shared office space that they do. And we went in there, we got a tiny little office with a whiteboard. We started mapping out what it was.
Who's the we?
So there's me, there's Jamie Cann, there's Joe Ballard, and there's Dan O'Brien. So we all worked together from day zero in Wayflyer. So Jamie would have ran all of the data team and ultimately growth then. Yeah. Joe was on the data side and engineering side and worked on new products ultimately. And Dan was our CRO. Yeah, in there.
So you're getting the band back together.
Yeah.
What was the thought behind that? Like you wanted to bring people you know straight away. You wanted to go fast. What was the thinking behind getting such a big team together so quickly?
They're the best people I've ever worked with. Yeah. Fair. But like, and I'm friends with them and we know each other so well. We trust each other so much. Like it's funny when you've worked with someone for like 5 years, normally in a startup, when like things come up, people go, oh, which of us does that? You know? Mm. Oh, I want to kind of try that, or you want to try that.
Lines, yeah.
Like that doesn't happen.
Joint CEOs.
Exactly. You
know, joint marketing heads and
big time. But we all are on different sides of it. Like Jamie did maths in college, worked across data science and for like his career. He's like so smart and he covers everything there. Joe covers everything on the engineering side. Dan covers everything on the sales side of things. It's really easy. Yeah, everything's easy.
What do you do?
Not much.
Ideas.
Financing maybe and ideas. Ideas, yeah. Yeah. Big picture kind of guy.
Yeah, I love it. Just a lot of this.
Yeah. Big picture kind of guy. Yeah.
Meetings. Yeah, meetings, pitches.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's the idea? What is Happy Stack?
Yeah, so I probably start by talking a bit about the e-commerce universe. Yeah, so within the e-commerce universe, you've got two big parties. You've got software companies that service e-com brands, so like Shopify and Klaviyo would be some of the big ones, you know. And on the other side, you've got e-commerce brands, so like Gym Plus Coffee here in Ireland, Allbirds, Warby Parker. And they're connected by various go-to-market strategies, so like salespeople reaching out from one to the other, events where they can meet, marketing, ads, posts through social media, influencers tweeting about their best favorite software product, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But by their very nature, these go-to-market strategies are inefficient. Yeah. And in particular, they get very inefficient as you try to scale them. In Wayflyer, we found this out the hard way. People don't scale linearly. And so as we scaled the team up, you know, our customer acquisition costs went through the roof. Our teams got bloated. And ultimately, the problem with this is that Most SaaS companies or software businesses fail at this stage because they can't scale efficiently. On the other side of it, for like the e-commerce brands on the other side, they have inboxes full because it's inefficient. They've inboxes full of people trying to reach out to them, selling them fucking everything. They don't know what products they should be using, what software products they should be working with. Those software products are more expensive than they should be because of the inefficiencies within software businesses, which ultimately leads to more e-com brands.
Okay. When you say go to market, that means just finding customers.
Just like how do we connect software businesses and brands? Like they're connected via like salespeople going, hey, do you want to try out my software? No different than in Wayflyer we did. And with HappySack, the aim is to like solve these inefficiencies that exist in these various go-to-market or the way that we connect these two groups of people.
Okay.
And there's like lots of people that are, I wouldn't say trying to solve this. It's more like trying to combat the inefficiencies. So the easy way to combat the inefficiencies is, well, let's automate the people involved. And what that allows you to do is it allows you to just increase volume or do more volume cheaper. Yeah. Now, we did that in Wayflyer. It works for a short period of time, but blasting everyone doesn't solve the inefficiencies. It actually makes the world worse.
Yeah, so it actually makes like it the more last thing you want is another bloody DM going, hey, insert name.
And everyone's like, sick of it. Everyone's sick of it.
And people's bullshit radar is so high now. It's you can tell an automated message like that. As clever as AI is, you can just tell, because I literally got one this morning. I just rolled my eyes. This dude is like, hey, I'd love if you'd vote for me in this thing. I'm like, I've never interacted with you in my life. Yeah. Just add you on LinkedIn.
But that's it.
I'd love if you vote for me. I'm like, I don't even fucking know you. What am I voting for you for?
And can you post about it too?
Like, it's just this disconnect. I know. Oh, no problem, stranger. I'll vote for you in some awards.
Like, I know. Yeah, but you now know that person's name.
Oh, I instantly deleted. I was like, gone. I was like, I stopped clogging my inbox. It was
But that's not the answer. So that's not the answer. So at HappySack, we're taking a data-driven approach to the whole thing. So what do I mean by that? Well, we're building a data universe covering all the software companies that exist and all the e-commerce brands that exist.
Okay.
So for example, we know if a brand is shipping to Europe and selling into Europe, but shipping from the US, not a great way to do it. We know if a brand has a lower conversion rate than they should have, and they're not using A/B testing, for example, on any of their landing pages. We know all of the software products that every brand is using. We scrape all of that information. Yeah. We know who the competitors of brands are. So I know, like, we build lists of Gym Plus Coffee's competitors are your Gymsharks and whoever else, so you can understand that. And what that allows you to do is it allows you to try to connect the right software products with the right brands. Be really specific about who you're getting in front of and what you're putting in front of people. And what that means is we get really high conversion rates whenever we reach out to people. Yeah, we still focus on the automation. We still don't want to do this with people, any of these go to market, but we get really high conversion rates and people start to listen to us when we talk to them about what they should do.
Yeah. So what are you selling them here?
So how we work with people. So we've built software to help them reach out to the right, to help software businesses get in front of the right brands. And how we use that is we've made a decision that we only want to work with the best software businesses that exist. Okay. So in Wayflyer, we underwrote tens of thousands of brands, taking that same mentality to software. The idea is let's find the best software businesses that exist serving e-com. When we find the best software businesses, we help them to scale up. We're like, if you have the best software, we want to help you scale, and we can do it at a fraction of the cost that they're currently acquiring customers. Because we're just much, much better at this because we have so much domain experience, because it's exactly what we did for 5 years in Wayflyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the interesting thing that comes out, we get paid by them for that, obviously. But the interesting thing that comes out of that is we're capturing this insane data on who the best software businesses are, because we're actually selling for them. We're looking at like response rates. We're looking at like close rates, everything. And going back to Wayflyer, when we started Wayflyer, we went out and pitched current SME default rates are 20%. We're going to be less than 1%. Mm. And people went, no way. And it was only when we showed them what we were doing and showed them the data we were capturing, that they went, wow, now I understand how you can have a 0.25% default rate. In a similar way in the VC world, okay? VCs have a 40% default rate. 40% of their investments go to zero, like big fat zeros. And I love when there's a big default rate because it means the room for improvement is significant. Mm. And we believe that we can make investments, therefore, at a 0% default rate. Why? Well, I'm actually selling for businesses. I'm able to see how much they make from a $1 million brand, a $5 million brand, a $10 million brand, a $50 million brand. I know how many of there are of them in the world. I know what the response rate are to reach out. I know what their close rate is to reach out. Not just that, I also control it. I'm actually helping them to actually control that growth. And so we get a really good idea of how quickly we can grow a business. When a venture investor looks at an investment, there's a financial model. Mm. And there's one big unknown in that. Customer acquisition, scales, sales. They have to go, are these assumptions reasonable? 5 people, they do 5 deals each. Yeah. 20 people, will they do 5 deals each? Yeah. Yeah, seems reasonable.
This is your linear point.
Exactly.
I get you, exactly.
And so for us, we're going, no, we're not looking at assumptions. We're actually doing the task. We're actually selling the product. We're getting that feedback. And so as well as working with the best software businesses, when we identify the ones that really are world beaters, we're going to invest in them. We're just literally making our first investment of $5 million into a business already. Like the business has only been going since May. We launched on September with a small group of 12 businesses, like helping them. We were able to like 500%, 600% increase their customer acquisition in like 3 weeks. Yeah. And so.
So are you raising money for this? Have you raised money for Happy Stack?
No, we've just funding it all ourselves, including this investment. So I think the idea is we think that we can grow the business to a pretty significant level ourselves, bootstrapping it ourselves. We're very lucky that we took out money via secondaries throughout Wayflyer. That obviously we couldn't do this otherwise. Mm. But that puts us in a great position to
control.
And our business by nature, because we're super lean, super focused on technology and using data to be super efficient, we're profitable as well. So our main business is profitable. The only thing we need capital for is to make investments into businesses. Yeah. So
it's going to be a beautiful model. So you're going to help these companies get bigger. You're going to pick the ones that are winners, invest in them, and then help them bigger again.
And the reality is, you know, there's businesses that are great businesses that we can help scale massively and scale really efficiently. But like, maybe we don't want to invest in them because there might be regulatory risk, or maybe we don't want to invest in them because it's a novel idea. Like there's people are now doing direct mail within e-com. So if you can't get someone, no one's responding to your email, you send them flyers. Mm. And do you know what? For the first 100 brands that sign up to that, it works really well.
I'm sure it does.
But when 10,000 brands are doing that, it's not going to work very well.
Everything has a cycle, right?
Exactly. So there's businesses where it makes sense for e-com brands to use this software for a time period and not after a time period. Mm. And so, yeah, what we think the outcome from what our outcome is more software businesses will succeed. They won't fail to scale. They won't fail because they have good products, but they won't fail because they didn't know how to scale the sales team, etc. At the same time, all these e-com brands, instead of just being sold shit all the time, they'll be giving products and told exactly why they should be using this. It's so much easier when you're reaching out to a Gym Plus Coffee saying, look, Niall, your conversion rate is lower than it should be in this space. You're not doing A/B testing software. Here's 4 other brands that are in your category that are doing it, and here's the impact it's having on them. Mm. Like,
it's the most compelling thing in the world.
Like, obviously, Niall wants to talk to you about that, yeah, because you're being so specific about what you're telling them.
But that's it, specificity. I always said to people when you're reaching out to anybody, even for you for a coffee or someone, and you're like, be specific.
Big time.
Hey, Jack, how could I grow my business? Where do you even start with that?
mental.
Like, it's all about specificity. Big time. People's, don't make people's lives harder.
Big time.
How do you make people's lives easier? How do you, like, make them money or make them easier or make them look good? Like, it's all about how can you help that person?
Big time.
So you excited?
I honestly, back to that thing, it's going way better than I ever expected it to go. It works so much better than I knew it was going to work, but it's working even better again. It's that same feeling we had back at the start of Wayflower.
Okay.
It's really taking off. Everyone we work with loves us like so much because we're like the most important, we're the most important people they've met, you know? And I think we can fundamentally, apart from the amount of businesses we can help, I think we can fundamentally change how VCs operate today, where, you know, they'll claim to be value add, but the reality is they're not. Yeah. And you know what? That makes sense. And you know why it makes sense? Because they are time-based. They're people. Like, you're relying on their advice. And whenever you're reliant on someone's time, there's such a limited amount of help they can give. It's like when people used to get onto me back in the day and say, I'm building software for e-com. Will you invest, Angel? It'd be great. You can invest me into introduce me to thousands of customers. And I'm like, yeah, no. Like, I'll invest if I like the product, but I'm not going to sit down and write 1,000 emails and think, when did I last talk to Gary? What did I say to him? Did I reply to him? Now I have to say, Gary, can you please talk to this person?
Yeah.
By the way, we must catch up for a coffee. Do you know?
Like, but you're using some of your social capital.
Exactly.
And it's like when people reach out to me, they're like, oh, you've had Jack in the pod. Can you intro me? No.
Yeah, no.
No, I definitely can't. I always say to good friends of mine, I'm like, look, anytime you're looking for an intro, ping me and I'll say, I've met them or I know them.
Exactly.
Two very, very different things. It's just people I've had on 3 years ago. I'm putting together this event next week for all past guests.
Class.
And there's some people I had to email and go, look, you probably don't even remember, but you did a pod of me in 2021. Love Whereas it. Some people I'm pinging on DM and Instagram going, here, next Wednesday, see you there.
Come along.
They're like, deadly.
Class.
You know, so I get exactly where you're coming from. I mean, advice is so subjective as well.
Big
advice is very subjective, whereas you're building data to go, look, it is what it is.
And software. I think, honestly, as software becomes easier to build, which it is doing, every VC of the future will end up building software. And the most important place to focus is go-to-market. Why? Because their go-to-market is similar across all of their portfolio companies. The way that people reach people is similar, and you can help all of them, and especially if you focus on a niche. Just focus on e-com. Yeah? Who better in the world outside of us to basically help founders who've never ran go to market got into the space because they wanted to build influencer management software because they loved influencers, you know? Who better to help than them? Yeah, or us to help them.
I'm conscious of your time, so I have a couple of last questions for you.
Sure.
You've made some investments yourself.
I have, yeah.
What's the crack with that?
You know what? I'm the easiest person in the entire world on a personal level to get an angel check out. No, I joke.
Because a few people, again, come back to the one degree of Jack Pierce. A few people are like, oh yeah, Jack Pierce invests in that. Jack Pierce invest. I'm like, okay, Jack's giving it like snuff it awake here.
No, I'm joking. You know what? I am obsessed with entrepreneurs. I'm very lucky that people backed me at the start. Going back, we raised $3 million before we had anything from people who believed in it. Us, you know, and I feel like you got to pay it for it, you know, when that's happened to you. So if I can help to encourage, create more entrepreneurs, if I can help to give them the confidence that if some lad on Baggett Street in a basement could build a $1 billion company, you probably can too.
Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, love it. Like, but I love it from the perspective of the energy. I love the energy that someone at the early stages of a business has, you know. I did a talk for I gave out prizes at this like Irish student entrepreneurship forum kind of event. And like this young lad, Aaron Devitt's his name, he started a company, Mark, M-A-R-C, that does like AI property management. Okay. And so he won the first prize, 10 grand.
Nice.
And he's just a ball of energy.
Class.
And he's like, every time I meet him, I leave like pumped. I'm pumped. Love that. Do you know, I'm pumped about my own business, never mind his.
But it's that, you know, this is why I do this job. This is why I have this podcast. I just love it. Because every time you meet these people, you're like, I'm more excited now, just about life, just about like, and I learn from all these people. I'm sure it's the same with you.
Big time. And so it's that. Yeah, I just think if I can help in any way to encourage that, like, I owe it to everyone to do that. Yeah.
Hopefully, you're listening to the pod and you're feeling inspired. Maybe you want to do new things in your own business, or maybe you have that brilliant idea you've always wanted to bring a little bit further and see if it works. So why not right now? You listen to the majority of the guests in this show, and they've been helped by the local enterprise office at some stage in the journey. They have something for everybody. Whether you have that idea you want to develop, you want to get your products to new markets, you want to innovate your existing products, or you want to expand staff and premises, they have the supports to help. So, why not today? If you want to start up or grow your business, then contact your local enterprise office today.
How do you look after your brain? Because obviously you've been through a very frantic couple of years.
Yeah.
You seem very balanced. You seem very happy.
Yeah.
You know, how do you, because I'm sure that has been, you've explained it very openly there and appreciate that. It's like, that's been high highs and low lows.
Big time.
So how have you stayed? Or have you?
So, I think I'm normally pretty good. I like, my dad's a sports psychologist and stuff. It helps. Like, I think I was meditating before it was cool to meditate back when I was playing golf and stuff like that.
Of course.
And so that has helped. I do it less than I should. I think that my through Wayflyer, I didn't stay healthy. Like, I stopped exercising and stuff like that. I wasn't eating healthy. The usual things that happen.
Why was that?
It was honestly there was always more to do. Yeah. And we were servicing the US from here. So all our 80% of our customers are US. So like my day finished at, and we were servicing Australia. So I would do calls with Australia at like 1 a.m, 2 a.m. We were doing underwriting and sales calls. So like through that period, it was like, I lived with my brother who was like one of the best salespeople, if not the best salesperson in the company.
Is that Andrew?
Andy's my cousin.
Okay.
Yeah. So Ravi, and then another guy, Andy Murphy, who also worked with us in sales. So we lived in a house together through this whole
thing. So there was no separation. It was just
like bang, bang, bang. We were in different rooms doing calls, doing underwritings, trying to get everything done.
Good and bad. Good for the business, bad for you.
But there was always more to do. But, you know, that's how it was. It was fine. Like it wasn't like I didn't become super, super crazy unhealthy. But my friends joke with me now that if you look at the first press release from Wayflyer, every single year you just see Jack's face getting pudgier and pudgier and pudgier.
Your friends will always remind you.
Yeah, they will. Yeah, they bring you down. All right.
Are you going to do the same now though? Are you going to follow the same path of just like all in on the business, or are you going to
do it a different way? I'm definitely smarter this time around, or more experienced all this. I have a great fiance at home who I love dearly, but she's great for, you know, keeping me level headed, let's call it. So that's pretty important, I would say. We exercise. We have a trainer that we book in every Monday and Thursday for 2 sessions anyone can go to. Right. So it's just like, make sure you do that. If you do 2 days a week with a trainer, you'll be
good
fine.
Start. Yeah. Very good start. Yeah.
You can do more outside of it. You can do less, but as long as you always do those two.
It's the anchors. So I always think that you have to have anchors in your week that just, if nothing else happens, but you have those anchors.
Just those things happen. That's it. Exactly.
So meditation for your brain, working out for your body. Anything else?
No, not a whole lot else. Yeah.
Just enjoying life.
Yeah. Just the usual things, you know.
So I want to ask everyone what their founder formula for success is.
Sure.
What would yours be?
My founder formula for success. So I have firm belief that like hard work is the only thing that creates success. I don't think talent matters at all. Going right back to Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hour rules and all that sort of stuff. So that would be one of them for sure. I think experiences. So people who see more all the time end up coming up with better ideas, just find it easier to connect dots. So if you see lots and lots and lots and lots of things, you start to get really good at connecting dots, like, oh, financing and this together, marketing analytics could work really well. And that's super important if you want to be an entrepreneur. So it is. And a third thing, hard work, experiences.
Hard work plus experiences equals success.
That's probably it. Yeah, that's probably it.
Quick fire round.
Yeah, love it.
What book should every founder read?
See, I'm always biased by the last book that I read. So
I'm the same. People are like, oh, well, you talk about books all the time. What's your best? I'm like, I read this one recently. It's really good. Yeah.
I would say that I don't read business books that much. Mm-hmm. So a book I read recently that I love, which is the most basic book of all time, was Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights.
Good
Super
book.
Enjoyable.
Yeah.
Great stories. Some
most
nice,
charming
some
man
nice,
in the world.
Oh, like, is he the coolest person ever?
He might be.
Yeah.
Green Lights, Matthew McConaughey.
Green Lights, yeah.
What's something you had to learn the hard way?
Scaling teams is really, really hard.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
Time with friends, family, a little bit of health, for sure, through that period. So you need to make sure that you balance that out. Yeah.
What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
The exact same thing I'm doing right now.
Love that. Yeah. It's the best answer in the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've given yourself that. I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can invest it in one person, one company, not yourself. Who is it?
One person, one company, not myself.
So you can give it to one person and say, this is 1 million to build something, or you give it to one person who's running a company and say, right, do more.
I'll give it to the three lads I work with, or outside of that, I'll give it to, you know what? There's a guy, young guy who started working with us, Charlie Gleason, Zip Mobility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's just started working with us maybe a month ago. Okay. And he's done like scooters and ran free now. And this is first time in like software, let's call it, in that world. And I've never seen anyone get up the curve quicker. But whatever he does after this is going to be big.
Okay.
Yeah.
Charlie. Yeah, I've followed his journey quite a lot. Like, yeah, he's done the dots.
Big time.
He's done a lot in a very short space of time.
Big time.
This is kind of a cheat question, so I'm going to have to give you a new answer. I was going to say, if you're starting again now, what would you build? You're already building it. So for you, it's slightly different. What else kind of gets your juices going? Because I know you have 100 ideas.
Sure.
Give us one good idea you're not building right now, but you think someone should.
Okay. So I'm building the golf brand because I like clothes and stuff like that. So I have a golf brand.
So you're building
Bold
golf.
Yeah, this is actually like one
right
of
here.
Our jackets. So it is.
Okay. Bold Golf.
Bold Golf.
Okay.
Yeah. Where we make really high-end Italian leather golf bags. We partner with graffiti artists all over the world. Cool. They spray paint and make a one-on-one. We then make prints. So we have 20 bags of each of them. And then we have other drops that we drop. So that's a passion project that I think could be big. In e-com, what else do I like? I still think that bidets in Europe, you know, Hello Tushy is a US one. How have we not got bidets in Europe yet? How have people not got onto that? You know, so an e-com brand, someone should set that up if there isn't one already. I haven't realized. And what's the other one? Golf carts, custom made golf carts with like funky colors and
love
stuff.
That.
I always like when, for e-com, I always like when there's a business where it's currently sold like through shops and stuff. No one's running Facebook ads. Like, no one's built a like cool looking brand running social ads. You just go to Florida. You just direct all your social media into the geolocation, into a specific place in Florida where there's tons of golf courses, where all of them buy golf carts anyway. It's like, what? You sell them for 10, 15, 20,000. There's a lot of margin in that.
I love that. Down in Marbella, I always said to my wife, I was like, I'll know I've met it when I've got a golf cart.
Yeah.
Just these boys zipping around Marbella in their golf carts. Like, and I'm like, slick. Because it's just such a baller move.
Yeah.
In a town whereby everyone's got a Lambo and a G-Wagon and a Ferrari, you know the true ballers. You know the lads who don't give a shit have got a golf
cart. Their Hummer golf cart, like.
But they're just golf carts and they're kind of tricked out. And I'm like, I bet your man's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have to show.
Yeah.
So people don't have to show. They're the real ones. So look out for the golf carts. What do you believe that other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
What do I believe that people would find strange?
I would have thought you would have a lot of answers for these.
No, yeah.
Because you're not a contrarian, but you use data to go against the curve. I would have thought you had a million answers for this.
I think that the people think that going into entrepreneurship is risky, whereas I actually think it's the complete opposite of risky. If you have a job, you're 25 years of age, you're 28 years of age, you're working in a Google or somewhere, okay? If you go off and start a business, you completely fuck it up for a year. It's the worst business of all time. You then go back to Google and ask them for your job back. They give you like a pay increase because you're a former founder now. Do you know? It's the people think that they're taking a risk. It's like, well, the upside if it works out is huge.
Yeah.
The downside if it doesn't work out is you get paid more in your old job. It's like if you don't have a family, if you don't have a mortgage to pay, there is no reason not to try it.
Yeah.
I understand why when you've a family and other things and you've responsibilities, it gets pretty hard. Yeah. Because you can't do that year of maybe not getting paid as much. But geez, the like people think of it as risky. It's like I think of it the opposite. Like this is the least risky thing I could possibly do.
I agree with you entirely on that. I think the opposite, the other side is there's a point of no return there.
Yeah.
You've kind of hinted out there. There is a point whereby people will never do it.
Big time.
I'm like, that's the worst thing of all. What's been your best investment?
So there's a few different ones. There's a Crowd Ghost, which is a marketplace for like people to sell B2B. Like if you have slow moving stock or Nike and stuff, it's like a TK Maxx online. They're doing really well. They're based out of LA.
Wow.
So I would have been in there early. Another one would be Matt Kelly. He has a business, Space Goods. It's like a mushroom coffee.
Yeah.
Where I classify that in a different way in that I put a good bit of money into that at a low valuation very early. So it's good from that perspective of returns versus other ones where you put in a small amount where they're like way up.
I know what you mean.
Multiples wise. So there's those mixes.
That's cool. Yeah, I know Space Goods. My mate's got a mushroom coffee as well. So like that's like the market leader. Like that's
Matt's,
the one.
That's great.
That's class. Yeah. What's been your worst investment?
Oh, that's mean, isn't it?
You don't have to call them out. You know, but you can say, look, it was like in this industry and I did this.
I'll blame our brand, Bull Golf, came from a 4 o'clock in the morning decision to start a golf brand with a mate of mine, Jack Brennan, where we called it Gimme Golf initially. And like we never spent any time on it. Like no one ever worked on it. So it just cost us like a little bit of money all the time.
Okay.
So
it's like, a drip, drip, drip. But not enough to be painful enough to deal with.
Yeah, no one dealt with it. We just like left it sit for like forever. And then eventually one day it was like, okay, if we're going to do this, we better do it properly. Like, so yeah, that was probably the worst one, let's call it.
And what's your final piece of advice to every entrepreneur listening?
I think it would go back to what I said of the thing I believe that other people don't. Just like, I think you should just give it a go. Yeah. No matter what, give it a go. And if you are trying to build something, go out and try to, that idea you said earlier, which is like figure out a business you could build on Pier Street, then in Dublin too, then in Dublin wider. Do that every day and write those ideas down, because those ideas will spur other ideas that are bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you do that every day, I guarantee you'll come up with something pretty quickly.
So, success is not inevitable, but you'll get a level
big time
of success.
Yeah.
Jack, where can people learn more about you and Happy Stack?
On our website, happystack.com. Maybe on my LinkedIn. I've got Instagram, which I don't really use. I've Twitter, actually, so I do. And I've just started a newsletter, which is very funny because my friends say that back in school, like, wouldn't write 10 words, so it's funny.
I love newsletters. I'll get a sign up on that. Where can people subscribe to that?
It's on Beehive, so it is, but I'll put it out on LinkedIn and Twitter.
We'll put it in the show notes as well.
Cool. Sounds
Jack,
good.
That was an absolute pleasure.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you
really
so much.
Appreciate you having me. That was great.